Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out tonight if you'd like to do so. Before we get into NXT proper, I did tell Kelly that I would mention something about this here tonight. Kelly's not with us here tonight. Kelly's fine. Kelly's family is fine. But one of Kelly's friends is not necessarily fine. So Kelly could kind of use any thoughts and anything that you might be able to throw his way. They could certainly use that to make sure they either turn out okay or the situation comes out as best as it possibly can. I'm not going to get into what's going on necessarily, but maybe throw Kelly a DM or something like that. Let him know you're thinking about him. I think he might be able to. He could probably use it. So with that said, Kelly, our thoughts are certainly with you. We hope you're back with us next week. And joining with me here tonight, Bruce, say hey.
Hey, I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. Find me on Twitter at B_D253. While Kelly was on the report tonight, I will be on the report for this Saturday's Vengeance Day PLE, and I hope my hands survive. But I think overall tonight was a better than standard go home show for NXT.
I would agree. I think tonight was a pretty good show. A lot of moving parts, a lot of story advancement that we kind of saw coming in most cases. But I think this is a pretty good show leading up into Vengeance Day. I'm pretty pumped about it. We're going to have Vengeance Day on Saturday. I believe it starts at 8:00 Eastern, if I'm not mistaken, without me actually
sounds about right
looking, but I think that's about right. And then on Sunday, that's what I get for going to pwtorch.com, not vip.pwtorch.com. Okay, sorry if you heard that coming blaring out of my actual speakers. On Saturday after Vengeance Day, Bruce, Kelly, and I will be recording a VIP roundtable, so you can hear that if you are VIP. And if you are not VIP, but you still want to hear a little bit of NXT Vengeance Day talk, join me here, right here on the same line, same feed for Wrestling Night in America with Greg Parks. I'll be joining him on Sunday at 8:00 Eastern to talk NXT Vengeance Day and whatever else he wants to bring up and whatever you guys bring up as callers on the show. So, join us there. But tonight we had a main event. The main event was Chase University versus the Dyad versus Nofei and Blade. The winners will be entering the tag team title match at Vengeance Day, the fatal four-way match, triple threat that has become a fatal four-way match with the entrance Chase U picking up the win here tonight to enter themselves into that fatal four-way at Vengeance Day. I think I kind of saw this coming. I was leaning towards Chase U winning. I didn't think the Dyad would, even though they're kind of being billed as a strong team. They haven't been really that strong lately. So I kind of didn't think Dyad was going to necessarily win here. I thought it might be Chase U, but I was really hoping. I was really, really pulling for a Nofei and Blade. I feel like these guys are the standouts of the match. And if out of anybody, I think they deserve that spot. I know we just did see them in a title match not that long ago, but regardless, I love the work that they're doing. They've come such a long way in the last year or so that they've been tagging together. Their gimmicks went from kind of cringeworthy, at least in my view at first, to pretty solid. I really like the character work that they've done. So I was really hoping to see Nofei and Blade maybe pick up the win here, but I think they were the standouts of this match. I feel like NXT has a lot of faith in Nofei and Blade right now. So I think their time is coming. But this was a fun match. I'm not a huge fan of multi-person tag matches, especially. They're usually chaotic. This wasn't quite as chaotic as I think it could have been. But still a lot of moving parts going on here. So, yeah, I'm excited to see Chase Yu enter the four-way at a fatal four-way tag match at Vengeance Day versus New Day, Gallus, and Pretty Deadly. That should be chaotic. I don't envy Bruce, and I feel for his wrists. So, Bruce, let us know what you thought of the main event tonight.
So it was a good main event. Pretty standard fatal four-way structure of how this works. You had the Dyad playing the standard heel tactics, trying to deny every tag. And, you know, when there was that hope spot for Andre Chase to tag in Inoue or Blade, they took both of them out, and they really worked that. They were really the only true heels in the match. So they had to work that extra, I guess a little bit extra, just to make sure all the heel bits got over. And I think they did a fine job. Like you said, everyone did great. You know, Faye and Blade were good. I don't know if I'd say anyone was a particular standout. I do think that each team did well. I don't think that – I did appreciate that there were no commercial breaks for this match, at least. Well, I wish that was the case for the Bate and Axiom match earlier in the night for me, because I missed half of that match because the online player doesn't get the split screen. But beyond that, here's why I'm okay with Chase Yu getting the victory here. Did you think any of these three teams are actually going to win on Saturday?
No, probably not.
That's why I'm okay with Chase Yu winning.
Yep.
For me, if you want either the Dyad or Inoue and Blade, granted, Inoue and Blade did have a title match not too long ago, but it was against Pretty Deadly. Or they did have one against the New Day as well. Still, if you want them, if you really want to get them over and put them over as another, obviously we see the potential, but if you really want to put them into that next echelon of tag teams, then I think the way to do that is to have them win the titles and not be in a match where they're just going to be fodder or might not even play into the decision, honestly. So I'm okay with the decision for that reason here. It's a Chase Yu is perfect for these kind of spots where you're excited that they're in the match, but you know they're not going to win. And they might get a hope spot or two where it looks really, really close during the match. You're going to have a near fall, but they're not going to be the ones to win. And that's fine because they're not supposed to be the ones to win. This is not their place in the show, on the card. My big question with Chase Yu, though, comes in with Hudson and Chase. For several weeks, maybe a couple months now, they've been hinting at some sort of dissension and indicating that maybe Duke Hudson has some ulterior motives, which we've been saying from the beginning, like maybe he's trying to take over, at least take the hail away from Andre Chase. But with all the things that have come out with the videos and everything, Hudson keeps saying that it's not what they think and it's not how it looks. I'm wondering if that comes to a head during this match here on Saturday. They didn't mention it at all tonight. There was no even allusion to the dissension that was brewing between Andre Chase and Duke Hudson. So I don't know if it's something they just scrapped or if it's something that just for tonight it didn't fit into the parameters of what they were doing. But that is something I'm keeping an eye on for on Saturday night because it is something that it's not – they didn't just – bring it up and get rid of it. This is something they've been going back to over and over again. So I just want to see if it's something that they continue with, and if so, what comes of it? Because they've kind of put doubts into my mind that it's got to be just Hudson straight up trying to take Hale and take over. What does he mean when he says it's not what it looks like? So. That's my biggest question coming out of this main event match. I'm looking forward to Saturday. Really, I think the team that I put my money on to win is Gallus. So I don't think Chase Yu has a shot. I think the New Day is dropping them, and I think Pretty Deadly is not going to win because I think they are moving pretty soon after. But we've been saying that for people like Cameron Grimes for 2 years, so who knows?
Totally off topic, but kind of circling back to my intro. I actually just got an update from Kelly. Basically, long story short, he had a friend who was missing, has been missing since the 22nd, and they just found her safe and sound. So just wanted to throw that out there, considering I did mention something going on in Kelly at the beginning of the show, but good news after all. So throwing that out there for anybody who might be wondering, and definitely glad that it was a good outcome and everything's good. Everybody's fine. So with that said, let us go over to the phone lines and see what you guys have to say about tonight's show, talk about Vengeance Day, and, you know, whatever else you want to talk about. I'm open. So let's go to area code 814. I know this phone number, but for some reason I can't associate it with the name. So tell me who you are.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
I don't know how I didn't know that. Like, I'm staring at this number. I see it every week. Ryan, what'd you think of the show tonight?
It was a fine show. I have a question for you on the key to lines. Do you think it could be Wendy Chu? Like, is she like a top suspect in this mystery? It's sort of like a murder mystery in this. Do you think it's somebody else?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, before I get into that, we had a pretty decent, we had actually kind of a fun segment tonight. At least I thought it was fun. It was a little cheesy, but we had a fun segment tonight where they went through the Nikita Lyons attack in the parking lot, the video footage from last week that they shot last week, and kind of went like almost frame by frame and showed you everybody that was in the shot. I don't have that written down in my notes, but I know Bruce and Tom were talking about it in our chat. So maybe Bruce can probably bring that up in a bit, who's actually in the scene and everything. But Ryan brings up here, in the background of one of the shots, one of these scenes was Wendy Chu kind of looking on in the background, drinking her soda out of the back seat of an SUV. She was not in the driver's seat. She was in the back seat, presumably taking a nap. I don't know. At least that's what I would think. However, they did, you know, they were kind of trying to figure out who done it, and they're pointing fingers a few different places here in this video. Wendy Chu, they certainly pointed a finger at, you know, maybe she either saw something, or actually, I think that's what they said about Wendy Chu, is they asked if she saw something, not necessarily who done it. But there were quite a few people that were just, you know, walking past Nikita Lyons here while she's lying on the ground, which, I don't know, I'm like chuckling to myself, finding it a little bit comical, because I'm not a huge Nikita Lyons fan, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, even if I saw somebody I don't like lying on the ground, I'm probably going to go, hey, oh my God, are you okay? And try to help them. So I was kind of surprised, like, people are just walking by her. Nobody was trying to help until Indy Hartwell and, they're pronouncing this different than how I feel like it should be pronounced. I think they're pronouncing it Lyra Valkyria. But, okay, that is how they pronounce it. Sweet. I keep saying Lyra, and it's like in my head that's the way it should be pronounced, but whether that's correct or not, who knows. But yeah, then the two of them show up to help Nikita Lyons. I don't really know who this could necessarily be. You know, I think in chat, in our four-way Skype chat, I think it was Bruce you put in it was a tweet, I think, from a tweet from somebody that said, you know, just let's face it, it's Valentina Froche. I think that would actually...
It was Joel.
It was Joel that said that, okay. So Joel Pearl said that. I really think that would be an awesome way for them to go with this. We did see Valentina kind of walking, storming away from the shot before they actually even show Nikita Lyons on the ground. You see, like, Valentina Froche just, like, storming away, walking with like this very serious look on her face. With her story that's been going on for a little while now, with her kind of being a little bit of a, lack of a better term, I guess, a bit of a goody two shoes, and you know, her trying to talk Sangha into, you know, not joining into his chair, and, you know, being a righteous dude, you know, punting out the brass knuckles, you know, in the match the other couple weeks ago. Electra Lopez is trying to get her to have a bit more of an edge to her character. I feel like that would be a great story for her, especially if they wanted to push her. I don't know if that's necessarily what they want to do with her right now. But I mean, hell, if they did, like, yeah, I attacked Nikita Lyons. I took out Nikita Lyons. They've been pushing Nikita Lyons in a pretty prominent position for, you know, quite some time now, a little less so now that, it seems like after, you know, Vince was out of the company, she wasn't getting pushed nearly as much, that my perception. Don't know if that's true or not. But still, she's been booked very prominently. So have, you know, somebody that's much lower on the card, like Valentina, you trying to get her, trying to, you know, push her a little bit. Sure. She did it for The Rock. She did it for the people. I guess she didn't hit her with the car, but still, parking lot attacks. Their parking lots are just dangerous in the wrestling world, guys. So, yeah, sir, I don't really know who it could be, but Valentina, for, you know, in terms of their particular storytelling, but I really like that storytelling with Valentina Feroz. Bruce, your thoughts on the Nikita Lyons tag?
Feroz makes sense with both the Sansa and Electra Lopez involvement in her character recently. I think Sansa at one point basically told her kind of take what you want or something, or if you want to gain respect, you have to something about, I don't remember. It was all about respect beyond that. And then Lopez is trying to tell her you can't just, it really reminds me of Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez early on, kind of the, you can't just get by if you're going to be blah, 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 and all this stuff. It's a storyline we see plenty of times in professional wrestling. I think when you look at it, the obvious answer is someone like Zoe Stark, because they're former partners, and she's the one who was walking away from the video in the background. I thought the funniest part of the video, I thought, you can clearly see when they freeze framed on Lash Legend, she was just pointing and laughing at Nikita Lyons, and I was cackling because of that. I thought that was just downright hilarious.
That was actually great. That was a great shot.
Yeah, it was funny. I think you could also... So beyond Stark, who did I just have in my head? I completely forgot. Who else is in the video at this point?
Clearly Dante Chen.
I mean, Dante Chen is obviously the one who is the attacker. I do think that Zoe Stark is still probably the most likely just because of their history together.
Yeah, it's the most obvious.
It's the most obvious, which leads me to believe they might not go that route.
Right.
So a Valentina Feroz would be a good, how do I put it? Not a swerve, but a nice change of direction, I guess, from what they would normally do in this situation. And, you know, she's talented. Tom loves her. And I think that he loves her and with Leon, unfortunately, out with an injury. But I think that this could be something that really finally gets her, not on the map necessarily, but really gets her a defined character that people can finally get behind, besides just the spunky girl that was in tag team with Melissa Leon. So I would go for that, though I do think that Stark is the obvious choice. And if I'm trying to think back on who she's feuded with, I mean, there, you know, Toxic Attraction is no more, and Dolan and Jane are involved with Perez, so it doesn't make sense for them to have done it. Stark does make the most sense, unless you open the storyline with Sanka and Perez in with Flores. Or Lopez in with Flores, sorry.
All right, Ryan, any follow-up and or another question?
The next question I have for you is on Jinder Mahal leading his boys to victory tonight in the announcer said tonight that he's a former WWE champion. I know on a prediction contest last week, someone said that Jinder may be entering the WWE title picture again once Cody, if he wins the title. Do you see that possibly happening, that he's there just so he's more fresh in NXT, and then when they bring him up, he's a new face, or you think he's going to stick around managing in this year?
I'll be honest, I hope he sticks around managing India's share. Matter of fact, I wrote about this in the Hits and Misses tonight. Something about, at least to me, the presentation so far of Jinder Mahal with them, and it hasn't, it's not like it's been over the top or anything like that, but it's just something about the bald Jinder Mahal in a nice suit with India's share. There's something that feels kind of special to me about it. I mean, I'm not talking like over the top special about it, but just it works. you know, Jinder has not really been, I mean, after he won the title, I mean, he's basically just kind of got relegated back down the card. You know, maybe not necessarily to jobber status, but,
yeah, cause he's not on TV status.
I was going to say, cause he's pretty much not on TV, but, so I don't know what's worse, but still, so it's good to see them doing something with him because, I mean, he is a talent. I got to give him that. There's definitely talent there. You know, he's not the most talented dude on the roster, but hey, you put him on an indie show, he's probably going to be the most talented dude on the indie show. So, you know, I'm cool with seeing him down here, you know, and kind of adding something into share. Now, that said, I'm sure he wants to be in the ring wrestling. I mean, unless for some reason, you know, he wants to take some time and not be wrestling, you know, and give it back to some new guys at the same time, you know, while he's either healing up or just taking some time off, you know, whatever, purely speculation. Yeah, I don't know if that's the case or not, but, you know, that could certainly be it. Or, you know, just that could be all that they have for him right now. I don't know if they would, you know, bring him up to be some sort of heel against Cody. You know, if Cody does win the title, hopefully, I'm kind of hoping at this point. But
Jey Uso.
Yeah, that would be sweet. That would be sweet. That I
been
that,
saying
way,
it since September 2020. Jey
you
Uso.
Have. You have, dude. You totally have. But, yeah, I totally kind of lost my train of thought. Oh, right, Cody. I could see that. I mean, Jinder, I feel like, could play a pretty decent heel for Cody. I don't think that's necessarily where they're going to be going with it, but I that's just kind of me giving it 30 seconds of thought. Bruce, any thoughts on it? Well, I kind of gather the rest of mine.
I'm tired, so I'm just going to leave it at this. The quickest way to really put the brakes to Cody Ray, our hot Cody Rhodes title run, would be to have him feud with Jinder Mahal.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, like, I'm thinking about it as the Jinder presentation. Is his current presentation, I'm like thinking, like, yeah, I kind of like that. But at the same time, I think if I was just watching the show and Jinder Mahal was to come out to face Cody Rhodes, I'd be like, no, this is dumb. But thinking about it now, I kind of like it. But I think in the moment, I would be like, no, this is his first feud, really? Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, even if not his first feud, just in general, I feel like,
or
yes, especially
yeah,
if his title run has gone well and he's been beating people and just going, you know, getting hot reactions and whatnot, Jinder Mahal is the quickest way to, no offense to Jinder, he's I think he's in the perfect spot, and he did wrestle a few weeks ago, I believe, against Julius or Brutus, one of the two, so I don't think
that's
he's
right,
not
yeah,
fully
he did.
Managing
that's, yeah,
he's not fully managing, so I think he's getting the best of both worlds, because he, after putting all that muscle on when he was champion and stuff, he kept getting injured, so I think this will be a good way for him to recalibrate his body while also minimizing the amount of bumps, which then minimizes the risk he takes in terms of injuries. And so, and you know, they Veer can talk, Sangha can talk, not as great as Veer, but I think they're more comfortable just at this point being the bodies, and Jinder is definitely comfortable talking. So I think right now the dynamic is good. And to the reason why you keep saying there's something about them, I don't know what it is. It's basically an Indian version, or I guess if you're looking at Jinder Mahal, a Punjab version of the Hurt Business.
Yeah, all right. You're right, actually. Okay. I like it. I like the Hurt Business. I wish the Hurt Business would come back.
It might be, actually.
I know. I hope. Fingers crossed. Ryan, anything else?
Any question on Axiom? Tonight they kept bringing up a kid. You see like a situation where Axiom gets injured and then we see the returning a kid, and then a kid gets injured and we see the returning Axiom, like they've done with Elias and Ezekiel in the past.
What is it, a dream within a dream, Ryan? Let's go.
I know, right? No, I mean, while they could do that, I don't think that's where it's going to go, because correct me if I'm wrong, but the match was A-Kid versus Tyler Bate that he was watching, right?
It was when he lost the Heritage Cup to Tyler Bate, because he was the first ever Heritage Cup winner, and then Tyler Bate defeated him to win that cup.
That's I didn't actually realize the Heritage Cup, but I thought the opponent was Bate. I was pretty sure it was anyway. So what I think it was just to kick off this story with him and Damon Kemp. Axiom, Tyler Bate and Damon Kemp. That's where I think what it is, you know, basically, for anybody that hadn't seen the show, Axiom was backstage watching Tyler Bate versus A-Kid for the Heritage Cup on his iPad or tablet or something, small screen. Tyler Bate comes in and he's like, hey, you know, you remind me a lot about A-Kid. Axiom's like, yeah, A-Kid, he's the best, right? I just think it was a way to introduce the two of them, give them something to talk about backstage, like just a plot device. And it was also just kind of a nice way to acknowledge the fact that, you know, he is A-Kid. One of those, if you know, you know. If you don't know, you don't know. And you're just kind of left wondering, all right, why are they praising this kid? I don't know. That's really all I think it is. I don't think they're going to go to a well of you know, Elias Ezekiel or you know, the three faces of Foley or anything like that. Although, I mean, they certainly could. You know, Axiom is kind of... it's not a superhero, but it could be. So, I mean, maybe A-Kid re-debuts and, you know, it's the secret identity for Axiom or something. I don't know. But that literally just came to me as it was spitballing out of my mouth. I don't know if I even like it or not, but I really don't think that's it. I think it was really just more of a plot device to get to the story. Bruce.
It's funny you bring up, if you know, you know, if you don't, you don't. I tweeted Axiom watching A-Kid, and I did the Spider-Man meme where they're pointing at each other. And someone says, Axiom is A-Kid? I had no idea. I was like, oh. And they go, I'm so far behind on NXT. I go, yeah, you're definitely far behind on NXT. So there are people that still don't know.
Okay, all right.
I think this is not the first time that they've referenced A-Kid with Axiom. So
I didn't think so. I thought they
had
did
it several times with Nathan Fraser during that Best of Three series. So one thing that we should – for me, I think it's just an inside joke that they're going to keep going back to, which with me is fine. I'm fine if they keep going back to the inside joke because, like you said, if you know, you know. If you don't, you don't. And it's hilarious because how they do it with Axiom's deadpan deliver and everyone else was kind of like, okay – It works. They're not overdoing these spots with the callbacks to A-Kid. I don't think it's going to be anything in terms of we're going to see the return of A-Kid. I think there was a reason that A-Kid became Axiom, and it's as A-Kid, there was just nothing beyond a very smooth and talented in-ring wrestler. The charisma didn't come out somehow. He's one of those wrestlers where you put a mask on him and all of a sudden, oh my gosh, he has so much more charisma. And it's sad to say because like Andrade, he's a good looking dude. So it's just a bit odd in that sense, but I think he's going to remain Axiom. I think people are becoming more attached to the Axiom gimmick, especially after the Iron Survival Challenge.
Yeah.
The Best of Three series of Nathan Fraser. Of course, those of us who knew him as A-Kid, obviously, we're excited with him as Axiom regardless. We're just concerned about what the gimmick meant. But I think they've done a good job of – we'll talk about Von Wagner later. They've done a good job of telling us who Axiom is and how – kind of what he's about, basically. And in that regard, I feel like to go back to A-Kid would be a disservice to his career.
I kind of almost agree with that, and I'm surprised I'm saying that considering my stance on Axiom. Even it's hard for me to quantify it because I forget how long ago
before the Iron Survival Challenge, basically.
Even the Best of Seven he had with Frazier, I forget how long ago that was, but it was after that Best of Seven. I kind of think it was too. That time frame sounds right. It's like maybe like November-ish time frame. But it was after that where I'm kind of like, okay, I started to turn a little bit on the Axiom character, you know, in favor of the Axiom character. After the Iron Survival Challenge, though, definitely, because I could certainly see drawing comparisons to Rey Mysterio is obviously a big comparison, and I'm sure it's obviously going to happen a lot to him being a master wrestler in WWE, but knowing WWE, they always want that one luchador, that one masked wrestler. They tried it with Sin Cara, they tried it with Kalisto, you know, the rest of Lucha House Party and whatever. You know, and nobody has really caught on like the iconic Rey Mysterio. Sin Cara maybe to a point at first, but I'm not saying Axiom's going to, but I feel like that character has more potential than Sin Cara did or Kalisto or anything like that, especially the way he's being booked in NXT. If NXT wrestlers, once they get called up to the main roster, continue to be getting booked in a way that has some continuity with their NXT character, and things like that. And you know, they did under Triple H, kind of how things have been under Triple H. I think he has a shot of being a pretty decent star on the main roster. Maybe not Rey Mysterio levels, but you know, a pretty decent babyface. If he was to go back to a kid, like you said, he seemed more charismatic as Axiom. So I don't know. I don't know what that would do, if that would hurt him, because unless he kept the Axiom name. I mean, if he was to, you know, take the mask off and still be Axiom, maybe for a heel turn or something, that might work. But I think if it was just kind of go back to the A-Kid gimmick, it may hurt. It may hurt, because I feel like Axiom is taking off better than we expected, better than I expected.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, for sure. Ryan, I'll give you one more, because we do have another caller just popped in.
Final questions on Stevie Turner. Any chance you could get her on the live cast, considering she's addicted to streaming, and Booker T says she has a podcast of some sort before she becomes too well known for the live cast?
I'll see if we can get Tom on that, being down in that area. I don't know. We really haven't done it. I mean, at least since I've been on the show past 3 years or so, we haven't really done interviews or anything like that. But except for one that I didn't get to air, which I'm kind of upset about, because I took the time to record it, but whatever. I don't know. I would say probably not, but you know, that could be something we could look into in the future.
Well, I'll just use that to lead into Stevie Turner and Danny Palmer. What I noticed is that after the match in the backstage segment was, I forget what was right after, but I could hear the crowd giving a standing ovation. It sounded like a Danny Palmer. They must really like her in the live crowd, because I'm pretty sure Turner had already left the ring after hitting the sit out Uranagi for the win, which I'm a fan of the Uranagi, of course, everyone knows that, but I don't think it looked that great tonight. I'm just wondering if Danny didn't get a big lift, or didn't give her as much of a lift as usual, but the Uranagi is quickly becoming a favorite among lots of different wrestlers. So if they were cheering for Danny Palmer, then I want to see more and see exactly what they're able to see that we don't see on TV. And for those who don't watch Level Up, because she obviously, if that's the case, she obviously has some connection with the crowd. And I want to see what that is.
Excuse me. I kind of noticed that too. I'm curious to see, because I'll be honest, I'm way behind on Level Up. I'm also behind on Tom's podcast bonus point, because I'm behind on Level Up. So I haven't really been keeping up with, you know, some of the newer up and comers like that. But yeah, she did seem to have a connection, you know, with them. As far as Stevie Turner goes, I really do like this gimmick. I like the presentation so far, especially, you know, behind the scenes, you know, the vignettes and everything. I know you said, I think it was when she, after her first debut, like you weren't super excited with the way that she was being presented. And I think it was that you didn't like the way she was reciting the lines. It just kind of seemed unnatural to you.
But, yeah, I said it seemed over rehearsed, but that I understood this gimmick. And as Kelly said, this is one of the most forward thinking gimmicks they've had, and I can see in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like I agree with Kelly, and it, you know, I did too, when we were talking about it, I think it was two or three weeks ago at this point.
Real quick, let me amend my statement because
sure. Yeah, do it.
Stream. So those of you who watch Drag Race this season, they have Sugar and Spice on. They're a TikTok duo and they have a lot of canned bits and they do a lot of streaming. And I just assume, I don't watch a lot of streamers, but I feel like streamers must have a lot of canned bits and a lot of things already just so that they could make the streams easier. So maybe that's what was coming off in Stevie Turner's vignette, now that I think about it. So I'll give her some more credit than I was giving her initially. In ring, I'm waiting to be a little more impressed, but it's hard to do that in a quick squash match. So we'll see there. I do think her character, though, as Kelly said, is definitely one that is thinking more toward a younger audience and toward the future than toward you or me. And we're not even that. We're older millennials, but we're not that far removed. So.
I almost feel like the number of grays in my beard are starting to outnumber the blacks but not yet. It's not there yet, but I don't want to talk about it. It's funny because it, you know, a lot of people, they're like, hey, have you seen the new Marvel movie? Have you seen this show? Have you seen that show? And I'm like, dude, I watch YouTube. I'm an ADD kid. So short content is great for me. I watch a lot of like science stuff on YouTube. I watch a lot of wrestling clips and things like that. But a lot of the people that I watch do have a very smooth talking voice that kind of sounds rehearsed, but basically very much in the style, the way that Stevie, presents herself in those vignettes and everything. So I actually really liked it. I liked it from the get go. And I think it's going to work, especially if they keep booking it well. But I like it. It's annoying. Everybody hates influencers, as we said. So, like, I think this is very easy for her to get some heat and potentially, you know, once, I mean, every good heel is going to turn face eventually. So once she does turn face, I think it's going to be like, it could be huge, especially like, you know, have some, you know, TikTok interaction, or like live stream interactions with the crowd and things like that. That could be huge. I agree with you in the ring. I wouldn't say I wasn't impressed, but I really want to see a little bit of more out of her, than just a squash. I have a feeling we're probably going to see her in at least one or two more squash matches before she's in any sort of a long-term match, just kind of the way NXT does things, but we'll see where it goes. I'm really high on this character. I'm curious to see what the ceiling is for her.
Question.
So, answer.
Is she a face or a heel? It doesn't matter.
Right now, I'm going to say she's a heel. The way that she's, and I can't pick out a particular instance right now, but there have been a few times where she's had interactions like Mackenzie Mitchell that just came off like complete bitchy. Not in a way that like I feel like, you know, a millennial influencer would, more like in a traditional heel way. So I'm going to say she's a heel. And plus I feel like Dani Palmer just came off as a quintessential baby face tonight. So I think she's going to be a heel. But I agree. I don't know if it does matter. The character I think is going to work either way. I think right now starting as a heel is probably a better way for her to start. I think it's going to get over with the crowd a bit more. Cause again, like I said, everybody hates influencers. I think it's going to be a very easy character to get heat with and like relatable heat with, especially for that younger crowd. So I think it's going to be a heel.
Yeah, people talk about the hate streamers and hate influencers, and yet they're always tuning in. So,
I know. It's so weird. I mean, like Logan Paul, you know, and I gotta stop for a second here, right? Because man, I can't stand Logan Paul. I don't like him and his brother. I haven't for a long time. holy crap, I respect this guy, though. After his showing at the Rumble, that in mid-air collision with Ricochet, like, I don't know
if
I've
ever... I mean, that was impressive, but it was also stupid.
Oh, it was totally stupid. But, like, the fact that, like, it's what? I think that's his, like, fourth match or whatever? Fifth match? I forget. But, I mean, and the fact that he wrestles the way he does, man, I give that dude so much credit. Yeah, him a lot of credit.
He did tear, his meniscus back in October at Saudi Arabia, too. So, I mean, it's a quick turnaround. A meniscus generally doesn't take too long, but to then be back in enough ring shape to do all that, it is impressive as much as you... I mean, at least he's someone where you're like, okay, I don't like this dude, but in this arena, he's pretty talented. I can't begrudge him for that.
And it is so... I mean, we all know it is so hard to wrestle at that level. And, I mean, for him to be able to do that, I mean, man, that's, like, kudos to what it takes to actually be able to do that. It's just insane. So, anyway, total, complete tangent aside, Ryan, we thank you as always, and we will talk with you next time, and I'll try to remember your number, because I don't know why. It just flew out of my brain this week. Now we'll go over to area code 623. Go ahead. Let us know what you thought of the show.
Hey, Nate. Hey, Bruce. This is Brian from Phoenix calling. How are you both doing this evening?
Hey, Brian. How are you? I'm doing pretty well.
Nate, it's Senior Torch subscriber, Brian.
My bad. Senior VIP subscriber.
Thanks, Doc Bruce. I appreciate it. And I'll make a correction. It's a 31-year senior PW Torch VIP subscriber.
Oh, got to get the year correct. I'm sorry about that.
Damn right. Getting corrected all over the place here.
Well, first of all, I hope you gentlemen have a really good night. Two different sides of the coast where you're on the East Coast, and Doc Bruce is way over in Hawaii, so I know it's a huge time difference.
Not even
difference.
A coast.
Yeah, correct.
Right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is a coast, but it's not like a East Coast, West Coast, but it is a coast, right?
It's just the best coast.
That's true. I'm going to bring up two things, both of them really briefly, and I want, of course, the reason I'm calling about your comments. First one, as you know, I live out here in Phoenix, and I don't have an East Coast, there you go, East Coast feed. So I didn't watch the show. I did read Kelly's recap, and I kind of lightly read them because I like to be surprised when I watch stuff. But the first thing I'm going to bring up is just like I saw that Drew Gulak had a match with Charlie Dempsey. I didn't read the results or anything, but I just want to say that I like that they brought Drew Gulak back. For some reason, I've always liked him since 205, actually since the Cruiserweight Classic Tournament. I've always liked Drew Gulak, so I'm glad they found a spot for him to do something in NXT. And working with Hank Walker is a good slot for him. And as a sidebar to that part, Nate and Bruce, I like how Hank Walker hasn't worn wrestling gear yet because it's so new to him, storyline-wise. And I think that's going to be a big deal when something like Drew Gulak gives him a pair of boots, kind of similar to, like, we never saw this on TV, of course, but like how William Regal gave Bryan Danielson a pair of boots. So I think that's going to be a big moment on in the storyline. So I just want to bring that part as I like Drew Gulak being down there. The next part I'll bring about, and this part is probably going to be a little bit more of a discussion, is, drum roll please, Nikita Lyons. Okay, so I read Kelly's report about how that they showed maybe a recap of the injury angle, parking lot strikes again, which I'm going to say something about a little bit later, and then also her from her hospital bed. Now, over on the internet, I love that term, but in Twitter more specifically, and I'm not sure, Nate, about yourself, but I'm sure Doc Bruce saw this, but there was a pop-up where, you know, some fill-in-the-name website said that WWE might bring the Authors of Pain back. And I was a fan of Authors of Pain. Razor is still a great name. Razor is still a great name, by the way. But, you know, a lot of the people on Twitter was saying, you know, well, these guys were injury-prone, and, you know, that's the reason why, probably one of the reasons why they were released. So then that segues us to Nikita Lyons. So you two gentlemen follow NXT a lot more closely than I do. And I'm not sure how many times she's been injured.
Third.
So I'm wondering if we get to the point. Oh, thanks, Dr. Bruce. I appreciate
all
it.
All the injuries.
Yep.
Oh, And to your knowledge, Dr. Bruce, being a doctor and all, same knee or different knees?
I think both knees, actually. I think two okay. on the current one, I think, is the second one on that.
Okay. Okay. So, you know, and at a point, when is WWE going to just say, you know, okay, well, hey, you know, we want to work with you, but, you know, this ring life isn't working, isn't not going to work for your body. And, you know, you can always take Tegan Nox and that, you know, especially in front of us, had a devastating injury, you know, in front of us during the second May Classic, I believe. So I want you to talk a little bit about that. And then, and I'm sorry if you talked about it already in the beginning of the show, I dialed on just a few minutes ago. But also I want to say about Nikita is that actually, go ahead. I want to hear what you two gentlemen say, and I'm going to say something else really quick about Nikita, and then I'll wrap up.
Sure. Yeah, no, sure, no problem. So with, like, Nikita Lyons, I mean, I mean, it's no secret I'm not a huge fan. I don't think, you know, anybody really on this show has been a major fan of Nikita Lyons. Yeah, that said, I don't want to see anybody get injured. But, you know, if you're – whatever style you're, you know, wrestling, and actually I think it was last week. It was you that brought this up. I'll let you talk about it.
In a chat, though, because I wasn't on the show last week.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'll kind of let you elaborate a little bit more on it. But, I mean, you know, she's doing a whole bunch of these, you know, roundhouse kicks and all this stuff that's, you know, tough on the knees. You know, maybe she shouldn't be doing that. So, you know, there's that. As far as, like, you know, where is that point of, like, okay, you know, we want to work with you, but you got to adjust your style a little bit. Who knows, considering the fact that, you know, Nia Jax is back. Not that she was necessarily, you know, injury prone, but she was prone to injure people. I don't know. It's tough to say. I mean, they've certainly, you know, gotten rid of people in the past for being injury prone. I don't think that they're going to necessarily release her for that, but it could certainly damage her position, you know, on the card. I mean, she was for how long now she's been, you know, booked as a very prominent competitor in the women's division. And you know, this third time that she's now needs to take, you know, an extended absence. How can you continue to really push her and try to build a division around her if all of a sudden, you know, she's, you know, going in for her fifth knee surgery, seventh knee surgery, or what have you. So it could certainly hurt her position on the card for sure. Bruce, I know you're champing at the bit to get into this one, so feel free.
Yeah, so Nate touched on it, but basically I said, I wonder how much of this has to do with maybe the fact that her body just isn't the type to be trying to do all these moves that she's doing. Not everybody's Keith Lee. Not everybody is, you know, Casey Catanzaro, or I guess I should say Katana Chance. And
see, you do it too. I don't feel bad. I don't feel bad. I was doing it all last week.
Well, and so what I was just trying to say, like, some people's bodies are better suited to do things like that, and it's not just because of body size or body type, but it has to do with genetics as well. Like, your ligaments might not be as strong as others. Your muscles might not be as stiff as others. There's different things, and I wonder if this can kind of, if they really do want to stick with her, and she wants to stick with this, if this can kind of give her finally some time to reevaluate her in-ring style. Hey, the clicks, the kicks, sure, they're flashy, but maybe one time where the kicks have actually landed and looked good. I don't think that's actually happened. The split leg drop, it doesn't look good, and it doesn't work as a finisher, and I think that's how she injured it last time. So, there's a way. She's one of the bigger women, both in height and size, and I think she can kind of go the Nia Jax route in NXT and be, maybe if not a heel, still still wrestle as a bigger heel and not, or a bigger kind of a bigger style, and not so much having to try and go the route of more of a striker or a cruiserweight, because it just doesn't seem like it meshes well with her body type. And I understand the potential they see in her. I haven't seen it really manifest more than maybe 1 week at a time when you have months in between that aren't as good. But I'm wondering if a style change will help her in terms of fulfilling that potential quickly and better than the pace she's at now.
You know, one of the things that you said kind of reminded me, you're talking about obviously changing her style and everything. And, you know, I was reminded, think of Stone Cold Steve Austin after he got dropped on his neck. You know, he went from being more of a technical wrestler to being more of a brawler. And he did that out of necessity because he knew he was going to need to, you know, that was the only way to extend his career. I feel like that's a smart way of doing it. You know, if your body can handle, you know, jumping off the top turnbuckle out to the floor every night, okay, go for it. But, you know, if you're getting injured, just, you know, throwing kicks and things like that, you know, it might be a little bit of time to adjust that style and kind of wrestle more like Andre the Giant. Don't get knocked over, you know.
You might not get this reference, Nate, but I'm sure Brian will. She just might have some Brandon Roy knees, and that's not good.
Yeah, I definitely don't get it.
No, Brian does, though. That's why he's laughing.
I'm sure it's a sports ball reference.
It's a basketball reference.
Yeah, you know. So, you know, it is what it is. It is what it is. But we'll see what's in store for her. I mean, I don't ever want to see anybody get hurt. You know, I hope she heals quickly. But I wouldn't say there's a lot. I don't think there's a lot that she needs to change. But the things that she does need to change, I feel like, are very important. And I do feel like the style is something. You know, she. Like Bruce was saying, the punches and kicks, especially the kicks, the roundhouse kicks and things that she throws, they're flashy. But I mean, there's so much air between the foot and the face that like it does not look believable from any camera angle. So I think there's a lot that does need to be adjusted there. And you know, she's clearly over with a certain demographic of fans. So let's get the rest of that demographic on board. By kind of adjusting the presentation and the moveset. So, and that, as Forrest Gump would say, that's all I get to say about that.
Thanks, Nate. Thanks, Dr. Bruce. I know we're losing listeners going down this Heat Alliance path. So I'll say this one thing, and I'll let some other callers.
We've actually gained about two. So that's okay.
Okay. Maybe there's some Heat Alliance fans out there. I'm not saying, guys, that I looked at Nikita Lyons' IG account. You know, I haven't spent the last 3 or 4 hours on it, you know, just going through videos and things. I haven't done that at all. In all seriousness, the one thing I was going to bring up, and Nate, you said a part about this a little bit, but yourself and Doc Bruce, is that you probably know, because I've said this a couple of times, but I'll say it again, I actively practice martial arts, and I've been doing it for, you know, 20 years, and I'm somewhat successful with it, even though I started at an older age. And I would say that I was looking at some of her moves and some of her things she was doing, and actually she does have really good technique, to be honest, gentlemen. Now, there's a child that translates to wrestling in a wrestling ring.
Exactly.
Doing, you know, simulated combat sport is one thing, but looking, you know, I was watching some of her punches, watching some of her kicks and her techniques, and they're solid, you know, per practicing, you know, with other opponents sparring karate-wise versus, you know, again, like I said, wrestling. So I didn't want to bring that part up too, that, you know, she has some skills, but again, just the translation about how that part. And like you said, you know, Nate, you know, we can look at a bunch of different wrestling matches, and we can see, like, you know, depending on, you can have the most, you know, as we can talk about Mr. John Cena from, what, 10, 12 years ago when, you know, his when his cross face was like showing like a ton of light, and you could stick your arm through. And
oh yeah, the
SPF.
Yeah.
Thank you. I apologize. Thank you. So anyway, I will let you.
You better apologize for forgetting that name.
Well, I didn't want to go down a route where we had to talk where it might allude to Redacted's name. So that's the reason why I was trying to hedge my thoughts with that.
Ah, okay. I got you. I pick up what you're putting down.
So I hope you both have a real good night, and I'll say this part really quick. You mentioned, thanks again, Dr. Bruce, and thanks, Nate, too, both of you, that I've been subscribing to it for a little while now. And for the people who are just listening on, if you're not a subscriber yet, I actually take a look into it. A ton of audio. The newsletter is still out there. The website has a lot of great stuff on it. So if you're interested, please look up pwtorch.com/govip. You can get some more information on that. Also, I'd like to mention about how Kelly Wells, who did the NXT Live Report, and also Tom Stout, they have a VIP exclusive, Torch VIP exclusive podcast. It's NXT 8 years back. And this Saturday, again, they do it every, the day that would have been 8 years ago, so it happens every Saturday. It's the lead up, ironically, to NXT TakeOver Rival is the show that's going to, this is the go home show that they're going to talk about this Saturday for NXT Rival. And the two big matches on it is going to be the four horsewomen. So we have Bayley, Becky Lynch, Charlotte, and Charlotte Flair and Sasha Banks in their Fatal 4-Way, a huge match. And then also it's Sami Zayn, the NXT champion, versus Kevin Owens, the first time they have they had a match. So it's a huge pay-per-view that's coming up, not this week, but next week. But this is the go-home show that Tom and Kelly are going to talk about. And also we talk movie trivia, and for your teaser for this one, named Doc Bruce, well, actually not even going to be a teaser. We're going to talk about Stephen King and some of his books that were brought over to movies that he original screenplay. Thank you. I was looking for that term, screenplays. That some of the books that went to screenplay. So that's what I was trying to say. So anyway, guys, I had enough time. Took enough of your time. Nate, always appreciate all the things you do. Thanks a lot. And Doc Bruce, you know you're one of my heroes. And I'm looking forward to being eventual 5 or 6 years from now, being another Doc, first letter B. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a real good rest of your night.
All right, Brian. Thank you as always. And, hey, I appreciate you doing part of my job and plugging all that stuff because that makes my life easier. So, awesome.
Well, today I found out I'm somebody's hero. Wow, thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome. Someday. I'll be somebody's hero someday. Someday. But anyway, funny thing, Stephen King. I almost killed him once. Actually serious. He's got a house in Gloucester, Massachusetts, and I'm not that far from Gloucester. And I was out with my ex-father-in-law, years ago, back when he was my father-in-law. And he's trying to show me all the bells and whistles on his fancy new car. And we almost hit somebody in a crosswalk. And it was definitely Stephen King. So thankfully we didn't, and I'm not all over the news for killing world famous author. So there's that. Anyway, that was a sidebar, total tangent, because I started thinking about Stephen King. Let's talk about NXT though. What else do we got here tonight? Oh, so Brian brought up Drew Gulak. So I guess that's probably a good transition to talk about the Drew Gulak, Hank Walker match, Drew Gulak, Charlie Dempsey match with Hank Walker, obviously involved. So one of the things that he brought up was he's really excited to see Drew Gulak back in NXT. I'm same here. I was really happy to see him come back to NXT. I was really enjoying the stuff he was doing, for 205, and on Raw when 205 was kind of part of Raw, and then obviously its own show too. But you really enjoy what the guy does. He's got some of the coolest music in NXT right now too, which is hard to do because WWE music in general just is kind of so generic and boring lately, but Gulak's got some cool music. It was kind of jamming to it when he was coming out tonight. So we saw Drew Gulak versus Charlie Dempsey. I'm trying to find who actually won this match. Gulak did. That's right. Gulak picked up the win after Dempsey was thrown into Hank Walker, who's kind of like not quite standing on the apron, but close enough to the apron where Dempsey got thrown into him with the Irish whip. And then a little bit of a distraction allowed Gulak to pick up the win with the most dreaded move in wrestling, the roll up, which
it
we
was
saw.
A stacked roll up though.
Well, yes. But a roll up nonetheless, we saw quite a few of those, tonight actually, or at least a few of them. So, this wasn't a bad match. It kind of funny. I was trying to catch up. So I started watching the show late. So I was trying to catch up, and I ended up watching this particular match on 1.5 times speed so I could make this show on time. Watching the two of them chain wrestle really fast was super comical. I kind of recommend, if you want to watch a technical match really fast, try it out. Go to YouTube, 1.5 speed. It's kind of fun. Anyway, I don't really have much more to say about this match. Hank Walker, one of the things that that Brian did bring up, Hank Walker, him, the fact that he does just come out in plain clothes, he's been wrestling in plain clothes, I do like that. He sticks out like a sore thumb is something I pointed out a few weeks ago when he was in the ring with the Creed brothers, Andrew Gulak. He sticks out like a sore thumb. Everybody else is in singlets and wrestling attire, all flashy looking, and he's there in his green button down and jeans. But I think it's exactly for the reason that Brian brought up. It's going to mean something when he gets his first singlet or pair of boots or, you know, whatever that symbolic thing is, where he, you know, Drew Gulak is like, okay, you have passed my class. I am your Yoda and you're done with training, whatever that moment is. I think that's exactly where they're going with that. So certainly good call there. Bruce, anything to say on Gulak, Dempsey, Walker, and the green button down shirt?
The positives. So the matches where the wrestlers basically never get further apart than an arm's reach of each other are some of my favorite matches to watch ever, because I just love that kind of technical grappling and all that stuff. I'm someone, when I watched MMA, I would love the grappling battles. And there are a lot of people like, oh, this is boring, I just want to fall asleep, or the just bleed dudes, right? And I'm like, nah, like, that there's so much technique and intricacy going on in what they're doing. So that was great. I think Gulak has believable outs if he wanted with Walker. He could say that he was trying to aim Dempsey into the rope, but Dempsey went through the rope instead, and that's how he hit him in the face on the outside. Now to the negative. I cannot stand Hank Walker being out there and wrestling in a button-up and pants. I understand Ryan's theory. There are just too many logical plot holes for me to basically co-sign here. And that is that if this was the case, they should have been talking about this with Hank Walker from the very first moment he appeared, and they haven't. They haven't even hinted at it. It's really just been brought up with Brian and yourself. And I didn't read Kelly's thoughts in the report, but maybe he brought it up too. But in case you had to hit it harder than you have done. And also, how many random jobbers and random people have we seen, even newcomers in storylines, where they've had gear? And the only time we don't see them wear gear is when they're training in the PC. There are just too many logical plot holes, too many things for me to not, that I can't buy into that, even though it probably is the route they're going to go. They haven't done a good enough job to me in laying the foundation for that to actually happen.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. That works. Okay. I thought you had more to say there, so I didn't have anything prepared to say, so I just got completely caught off guard. your cadence, for some reason, I thought you were going to keep going. So, with that, let me go to an email from Kevin Catani, because I happen to have that up on my screen. Kevin says, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. On the heels of the Royal Rumble, I was wondering what you all thought of NXT's presence on that PLE. I don't know what I expected before the event, but I did think at least one or two NXT males would be in the Rumble. I thought Roxanne, Indy, and Zoe represented well. What do you all think? Thanks, as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. And bonus point, office hours are now over. Professor Kevin P. Catani. Okay, so I did think we were going to see some NXT male involvement in the Rumble. We talked about it actually quite a bit, if memory serves. Bron Breakker was definitely somebody we brought up. I think Carmelo Hayes, Grayson Waller were names that we talked about. I know there was probably at least one or two more. So that's definitely something that I thought would happen. We also talked about Zoe Stark, I think we actually talked about all three of them, Zoe Stark, Indy, and Roxanne, you know, being, you know, potential entrants in the Royal Rumble as well. I think they did a great job. One thing that I am a little bit upset about, and it's nitpicky, but I'm upset about it. The New Day and Roxanne Perez did not come out with their NXT titles. And I hate that. I mean, God, you had Mickie James come out with the Impact title last year, but you can't, you know, promoting for a different company, which, don't get me wrong, loved it, glad they did it. I thought that was such a cool moment, still even get goosebumps when I watch it. So, like, I'm totally fine with it. But you're not going to promote NXT on a show that you're giving away for free on Peacock. It was the most watched Rumble. I mean, they said it on Raw last night. It was the most watched Rumble ever. I mean, they gave it away for free on Peacock. Why not talk about it? Talk about NXT. You've got your NXT tag team champions in the Rumble. You've got Roxanne Perez, your NXT women's champion in the Rumble. And obviously they're talking about that. The announce team was talking about that, but show us that title. Like, nobody knows who Roxanne Perez is. I mean, the crowd was absolutely dead when Zoe Stark and Indy Hartwell came out. So, especially for Roxanne Perez, her being the champion, show a title around her waist. Sure, maybe the 50,000 people in attendance are like, who's that champion, right? Unless you put some graphic up on the screen that says NXT Women's Champion. But tell the people at home who she is and let that title represent that championship. Don't just say she's a women's champion. Like, give me that visual representation. That's what it's there for. And it's such, I don't know, it's such a small thing. And maybe I shouldn't be as upset about it as I am, but like, it bugs me. So there's that. Other than that, though, I thought they all had really good showings in the Rumble. I mean, Indy, the fact that she got the point or give the thumbs up for the WrestleMania sign, I thought was really cool. You know, Zoe Stark, you know, what she said tonight, she went like a half an hour in the match. Like, that was great. You know, Roxanne Perez, she wasn't in there for that long, if I'm not mistaken, but the fact that she was in there at all is awesome. Especially, I mean, yes, she is the women's champion, but she's also, like, probably one of the younger people in the roster. So really cool to see her get that spot. So I was all for it, for all of them. So glad to see it happen. So Bruce, I'm going to throw to you on that. And I'm also going to throw to you on the Toxic Attraction, Roxanne Perez, interview spot, backstage where, it kind of broke down and we ended up seeing Roxanne Perez attack Toxic Attraction after the segment. So feel free to talk about both of them.
All I saw from the Rumble was the closing angle. I didn't care to watch the event. And then I was told that...
Wait, what? Really?
I didn't. All I cared about was
I watched,
really what happened with Roman Reigns and Sami Zayn. Jey Uso wasn't even in the Rumble, so I didn't care. There
I
really
more forward to the Rumble than WrestleMania.
There was nothing about this Rumble that really drew me in, I'll put it that way. Especially with just it being so obvious that Cody and Rhea Ripley are going to win. Again, the only thing I cared about was the very last angle that played out. So I watched that part. But nothing else really drew me to the event. But I also was told that Roxanne Perez did not come out with the title, and that upset me because I was like, why would you not do that? And so
wait a minute, back up a second here. You mean to tell me that you spoiled Roxanne Perez coming out in the Royal Rumble for me and you didn't even watch the damn thing?
Yep.
Okay, I just wanted to be clear on that.
Yep.
Okay.
I was, if I remember correctly, I was playing Assassin's Creed Origins instead, because I just didn't really care.
Fair enough.
So how they did, I'll leave it to you to say, but I'll move on to the angle tonight. Every time they interrupted her, I was just sitting there thinking, and I even tweeted this, like, I was just waiting for Roxanne to get up and whoop their asses, and she did. And the more they kept on JC and Gigi, after she got out of there, after she left, made it obvious that, of course, she's going to go jump them. But I think they did a good job with making Roxanne have that very dejected face right before she went to go confront them. I think there was just too much overacting from JC and Gigi, and I think Roxanne played her part well, especially when she jumped them and was really trying to be, was really having to be restrained, like, I don't know, like you're holding back an angry child or something like that, or someone who's just so furious they might be a danger to themselves. So, stands well. I think there was too much from Gigi and JC. They're really hammering home the story that they're going to be dual champion, which obviously means they're not going to win on Saturday. But if they do go that route, at least what they've done is, unlike what they did with Hank Walker and the whole attire thing, they've laid the foundation for if that does happen. So we'll see if it does happen, but I still assume that Roxanne Perez walks out on Saturday as the NXT Women's Champion.
So with the Hank Walker thing, like, I don't necessarily think it, like, at least from my perspective, like the way I was talking about it, like, I wasn't thinking it was going to be like this big, like, angle or anything, more as just kind of like a symbolic thing that like Gulak does, you know, one day that he feels that Walker has earned it, you know, like, maybe there should be foreshadowing for it, but I don't know. Like, it wasn't like it was like this big grandiose thing in my head. I just wanted to clarify
right.
that.
Right. But is Vic, are Vic and Joseph, are Vic and Booker T just going to sit there like, Hank Walker is out there in a singlet and we're not going to mention anything about the fact that he looks different? Like, I just think there's too many plot holes to get through for that not to have been, not to be foreshadowed what they're going to do. So they still have time, but I think,
yeah, no,
as, of right now, I think of as of right now, it's just, I just.
I'll give you that. Working. I'll give you that. That's cool. Like you said, I pretty much agree with everything you said with the JCJ and Gigi Dolin and Roxanne segment. I think the overacting definitely there. Roxanne Perez, when she was talking about, you know, her Royal Rumble experience, seemed a little forced in almost like she was trying to, I don't know what the words I'm looking for are, but like, it's almost like she's trying to like get sympathy on herself or I don't know, but it was the way she delivered it was just a little odd for me, but that's more of a nitpick than anything. I think it was fine, but it was just a little odd. Other than that though, I think she was perfectly fine in the segment. And I think it was effective. Dolin and Jane overacting 100%, but that's par for the course for them. Definitely getting better, but a long way to go. I really wonder what is going to happen to them if they wind up getting split up. I don't think either one of them is going to be able to really hang on their own. And I maybe I'm wrong, but at least from what we've seen out of them so far and, you know, over the last year plus that they've been a team, you know, it was all Mandy Rose. Mandy Rose was really kind of holding that Toxic Attraction together. And I feel like without her, I don't want to say they're floundering, because I don't think they're floundering, but it's not an authentic act. It doesn't come off as authentic to me. It feels,
I'm still
going to
say, Zoe Stark needs to be the leader of the next Toxic Attraction. Like, they need Zoe Stark as the leader.
Yeah, no, Zoe Stark or Sonya Deville, I feel like, would be amazing. And because, I mean, we saw a little bit of that when Sonya Deville came in to help Toxic Attraction. I thought they had some great chemistry together. So I feel like that would be a great pairing, or Zoe Stark. Like, if she was to pick them up as her two lackeys, hell yeah. I'd so be on board with that. So, for sure. All right, cool. So we talked about Kevin's email. Let's talk a little bit more about the show. So I do apologize. When I'm hosting, I usually try to have some more notes typed out, you know, like more segments and things like that. We weren't quite sure if Kelly was going to be hosting the show tonight or not, and I didn't know that I was going to be hosting until about halfway through. So I don't have, like, everything written down. But let's talk about our opener tonight, Indushare versus the Creeds. We did kind of talk about that. Do we have anything else to add to Indushare versus Creeds? Or do you have anything worse?
I like Indusher's attire. I'll say that.
I thought they look good tonight.
I like how they come out and they're wearing it. Oh, we didn't talk about how the match ended, which is a big angle. Julius ran the rope,
right,
and Nyla was on there because she was talking Jinder Mahal off after he grabbed Julius's leg. And Julius ran into her and knocked her off into the announce table. And Julius was, of course, shocked and distraught with himself, and then was hit with a huge, I think an Uranage, if I remember correctly.
I think it was, yeah.
Or a chokeslam. It was a chokeslam by Sandra. That's why I thought it was Uranage, a chokeslam, and lost the match. And after the match, they didn't go back to it, but they showed Julius and Brutus outside tending to Ivy, and you can see Julius saying to her, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." So, again, there's been this tension with Ivy and the Creeds for a while now. It seemed like last week she got them back on the same page. So I'm wondering what this does in terms of or how they're going to address this next week and possibly even on Saturday at Vengeance Day. But that's the thing we didn't talk about, and I think we definitely need to address.
Yes, for sure. Let's talk about it. Let me back up. So I'm really intrigued with this, the dissension in the ranks with the Creeds. What I'm really curious about actually at this particular moment in time, where's Roderick Strong? He never got released, did he?
He got written off in that Damon Kemp angle. I don't think he ever came back.
He hasn't.
Right?
He hasn't. Still currently signed to WWE. Okay. So, you know, where does Roderick Strong fit in to this whole picture? Like, I mean, I know, you know, I'm pretty sure his wife had a baby and that he was taking time off. I think that's what
that
sounds right in my head.
She's been wrestling AEW consistently for the last year.
You're
I'm
right.
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? You're right. So I don't know. Maybe he's right here. I mean, it was October 12th, 2022 was when we saw that vignette of him apologizing to everybody from Diamond Mine when he's in the neck brace, you know, in the hospital or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, we haven't seen him in a while. So like, where's he throughout all of this? So there's that. That just kind of popped into my head. But, you know, what is going to happen with, you know, with Ivy Nile? Like, I kind of feel like it's almost time for her to split away from Diamond Mine, maybe. You know, she's got this tag team going with Tatum Paxley. That seems to be going pretty well. You know, I mean, they're losing, but I mean, they've got some good chemistry together. They're getting screen time, you know, so there is that. But there hasn't really seemed like there's been much of a, I don't want to say hasn't been much of a bond because I guess there has been because, you know, obviously they're looking out for one another or whatever, but those threads have been there that something is going to happen. I do fear for her a little bit when she does go off on her own, if she does go off on her own, even if that is with Tatum Paxley, because she isn't tied to this faction. But at the same time, I don't know if she needs Diamond Mine. I feel like she's a good enough talent where she could stand on her own. So your thoughts on all of that?
I think she does need the tag team right now. She's had that one good promo, and that was last week where we were all just like, whoa. So I'm not sure she's ready for a distinct singles push because of the amount that would carry. And I think at this point, you just have to make her kind of a mid-card stalwart, which I don't think is – I see a lot of potential in Ivy Nile, so I think you want to get the slow burn with her because she's green, she's been improving, but you definitely don't want to push her too fast. With Roderick Strong, honestly, I wonder if he does come back. I think he just might go straight after Damon Kemp. Like, I wonder if his return is during this fate Axiom Kemp thing, and he comes to thwart Kemp in their eventual triple threat match or whatever, and that leads to their feud as Roderick Strong returns to get revenge on the dude who put him on the show.
That would be awesome.
I think that would be more likely than him coming to try and solve the Diamond Mine's problems and their issues. They need to show that they can move beyond his leadership and show that they're capable enough without him. And But then they also could just have written him off and having him write out his contract. Who knows? So I do think if we do see the return of Robert Strong, that I would personally, that's the word, have him go after Damon Kemp, because you already have that angle storyline built in with the injury angle from the summertime. I think that's
it was October 12, 2022.
Well, you said that's when he came back to apologize.
That was the skit when he was apologizing, like in the hospital. Like they were actually at like a hospital.
I remember that much.
So when
did Kemp injure him is my question.
It was the week before. It was either the week or 2 before that. Yeah, because it was I think it might have been a week between the injury and then that skit, if memory serves. It sounds right. I've been wrong in the past, though, but that sounds right.
I'll trust you.
So, but I would be on board with either. Like, and I think he could probably even do both, you know, and kind of if he comes back, address Damon Kemp and also address, you know, Diamond Mine. Because, you know, one of the things that you just said is, you know, Diamond Mine need to show that they can kind of stand on their own without his leadership. And Diamond Mine hasn't really been able to do that. Now, granted, they were still fractured under him. There was, you know, we were talking about, you know, and they were showing signs of Roderick Strong kind of de facto, being like a, what's the word I'm looking for? But basically, an asshole, but basically kind of being the reason Diamond Mine would like potentially implode, is kind of what I was looking for. You know, so we did see signs of that. It's not like they were a completely like whole faction, you know, unified faction before, you know, he got, quote, injured and written off. But I, you know, since Roderick Strong's been gone, I mean, we've seen the Creeds make, you know, wild decisions, crazy decisions. You know, Ivy Nile keep talking them down. So, I mean, and, you know, they've lost a few times. They had the titles. They lost the titles. So I feel like Roderick Strong could come back and be like, look, guys, I'm here to kind of like regroup you guys, refocus you guys. Let's get back to it. I think the stuff with Damon Kemp is much more intriguing, but I feel like they could probably do both, and maybe not like the same week or something, but you know, I feel like they could probably do both of them. But anyway, that's kind of my two cents on all of that. All right, so let's go ahead and talk about. So we talked a little bit about Zoe Stark and Indy Hartwell in the Royal Rumble. So let's talk about their match tonight. That was a result of the Royal Rumble. Earlier in the night, we saw Indy Hartwell sitting out back with a whole bunch of the girls. I know you and Tom were talking about it in our chat. I know Sol Ruka was in there, and that's like one of the only ones I can remember off the top of my head right now. But she was out back talking with a bunch of the girls about her experience in the Royal Rumble. Zoe Stark comes in and basically, you know, is like, oh, you weren't in the Rumble. I was in there for 30 minutes. I don't remember you. Oh, wait, I do remember you in there. You pointed at the WrestleMania sign and then got thrown out. You know, so essentially an argument kind of devolved from there. Some attacking and whatnot, per usual in the wrestling world, and led to this match here tonight between the two, kind of to see who was who's the better amongst the two Royal Rumble entrants that don't hold the title, because there were technically three. So Zoe Stark did wind up getting the victory here tonight over Indy Hartwell. I mean, I enjoyed this match. Wasn't anything like over the top, anything crazy or anything like that. There were a couple botched spots. Like there was an arm drag where Indy tried to arm drag Zoe and Zoe just was a little mistimed. And so like Indy kind of like whipped her arm forward, like her own arm forward. And then Zoe went a couple little spots like that I noticed throughout this match. I don't know if like their chemistry was super great. But it wasn't a bad match overall. Zoe Stark is awesome as a heel. I feel like she is completely 100% embraced this character. I love the way, just the little nuances that she brings, just her facial expressions, the way she walks, the way she applies a hold, everything about her heel character is great. I kind of contrast that with Indy Hartwell. Now, I love Indy Hartwell. Don't get me wrong. You get a soft spot in my heart. It's a soft spot for Indy Hartwell. But the past few weeks, we kind of have seen this edge to Indy, you know, both behind this, on the mic, as well as, you know, in the ring. And I didn't quite get that out of her tonight. I don't know if that was by design or what. Yeah, obviously she showed a little bit of backbone to Zoe backstage, kind of, you know, standing up to her and whatnot. But that was kind of it. The edge that we've seen in the past in the ring anyway, I felt wasn't super there tonight. A little bit to an extent, yes, but it hasn't been the way that it has the past, you know, maybe 4 or 5 weeks. I kind of started thinking, like, why? And I think it might be because she's up against Zoe Stark. Zoe is somebody that they're clearly pushing as, like, the next monster heel in the women's division. You know, somebody to be afraid of. Somebody, you know, in the vein of, like, Rhea Ripley or you know, Shayna Baszler. Somebody that has, like, just that badass reputation that you don't want to really mess with. So maybe that's why. And, you know, she was kind of backing off on a little bit of that tonight. So Zoe's... So those characteristics in Zoe could kind of shine. That could certainly be it. You know, so I don't know if it's just kind of nitpicking on my part or what, but there was at least something that I did notice. Otherwise, I think it was smart for Zoe to get the win here, simply because, you know, kind of what I was just talking about. She's being booked to be that monster, you know, that next monster heel in women's division. Have her get that dominant win over somebody like Indy Hartwell, who's been more of like a mid-carder. I wouldn't say a jobber, but I mean, you know, it's not like she's winning a whole bunch of, you know, big matches. So I feel like, you know, getting a clean win over Indy is certainly makes sense. And I think if they continue that story with Indy kind of having that bit of a chip on her shoulder and that more of an edge, she could even use this loss to kind of propel that story forward. So I think it could all certainly work. Bruce, Indy, and Zoe.
You know, the ending sequence was nice and smooth into Zoe Stark's stilt finisher. So I'll
totally, yes.
Give it some nice credit there. Another thing that I should say is it's really tough because Indy Hartwell had that nice singles winning streak going on for a bit leading into the qualifying match for Iron Survivor Challenge. It's kind of just gone back to where she was before then, which is sort of a mid-card gatekeeper, lower mid-card gatekeeper, I should say.
Yeah.
Zoe Stark definitely should be over. She, like I said, what I would do is I would make her the leader of a new faction with JC Jane and Gigi Dolin. And I think... that way, you get another high-quality women's stable act on the show. And with those three, it makes a good way to get other storylines and other women involved around them, which, to me, I think would be a bonus and a plus. So if Stark isn't set to win the title anytime soon, I think, you know, I've long said that if anyone's going to beat Roxanne Perez for the title, I'm going to assume that's Cora Jade as a heel later down the line. But if you don't want to go with Cora Jade and you want a formidable heel with something behind her, I'd say Zoe Stark backed by JC Jane and Gigi Dolin as a heel group, as a top heel faction, I think would do that.
All right, so let's move on here. Let's talk about the only match I think we haven't talked about so far was Von Wagner versus Dijak. So we saw Wes Lee come out earlier in the night to kind of hype up his match against against Dijak at Vengeance Day on Saturday for the NXT North American title. Von Wagner and Mr. Stone come out in the middle of, or sorry, Dijak first comes out. To kind of address that, and, you know, back and forth, kind of your normal wrestling face-to-face before a big match, you know, who's going to win, I'm better than you, yada, yada. Von Wagner comes out with Mr. Stone. And essentially they start, saying that Von Wagner's been overlooked and, you know, he should be in contendership for the title. Wes Lee gets the idea that they should have a match. Dijak and Von Wagner should have a match. And whoever wins, or if Von Wagner wins, he will be the new number one contender after Vengeance Day. So apparently Wes Lee has the power to make a match. Granted, on commentary, they did say that Shawn Michaels approved the match and was allowing the two men to fight because the match happened immediately after that in-ring segment. They started brawling and the bell rang shortly thereafter. So is what it is. I just thought it was kind of weird at first. So like Wesley's like making a match, but is what it is. We did see Dijak get the win here over Von Wagner. I wouldn't say it wasn't a bad match, but it was this is the way I put it in the hits and misses. I couldn't quite figure out the best way to describe it. It felt a little clunky to me for kind of lack of a better term. A lot of times, you know, two big hosses on paper look like it's going to be a great idea. And then you get them in the ring and it's not super great. Turn to Big Show versus Kane on Raw, like in the early 2000s, and you'll understand what I'm talking about.
Just the early 2000s?
Well, there's one match in particular where, and I think you probably know the one I'm talking about, where the two of them actually try to start chain wrestling. And like it was kind of more of a rib on each other, but they did it on Raw Live. And it, where I give them credit for, you know, actually doing some halfway decent chain wrestling, it was weird. It was really weird. It wasn't a good match by any stretch of imagination. So there's that. Where this match, I wouldn't say was quite that. It didn't quite work. I don't feel like their chemistry was all that great. Von Wagner's still pretty green. I mean, he's been doing this now for about 5 or 6 years in NXT, even though he's really been only on TV for the past year and a half. But he's getting better, but he's still a little green. Some of that for me, at least shown through here. It was okay. What kind of threw me a little bit though, was the fact that he lost. Now granted, it does play into a segment that I'll talk about in a second, but I thought it was a little strange that he did lose, considering, you know, they were just kind of hyping him up as maybe the next contender. Like I said, that does play into another segment earlier or later on in the night where Mr. Stone's kind of basically saying, you know, hey, like, I don't know who you are. Help me to help you figure it out. And just I wish Tom was here because he's my Scrubs buddy. There's that scene in Scrubs where Dr. Cox is just like, help me to help you. Help me to help you. He was channeling that so hard tonight. I hope he watched that scene in Scrubs before he did that. That was the only thing I could think of anyway. I thought it was funny. Yeah, so I think that's going to kind of, and Bruce talked about it a little bit earlier tonight, that's going to kind of set the stage for a bit of a change for Von Wagner, where we might see a bit more character development out of him. Right now, he's just, you know, big, mean, tough, angry eyebrows guy. We don't really know much about him. You know, years ago, who is Seth Rollins? We kind of now we understand who Seth Rollins is. Seth freaking Rollins. He just had the freaking in there and you understand everything. We got to find the freaking for Von Wagner kind of take that character and mold it into something a bit more than what it is. I feel like there's he's definitely got something. Like, I don't know if he has that it factor that, you know, somebody like Stone Cold or you know, Cena, Roman or whatever has, but he's certainly got a good look. He's decent in the ring. He's okay on the mic. I feel like if they're going to invest more time in him, which they clearly seem like they are, give him some more to work with, add some more layers to that character, give it some more depth, and allow the fans to kind of latch onto him a bit more. Cause I think for the most part, fans just largely don't care about Von Wagner. They don't like him. They don't hate him. He's just okay, Von Wagner's there, you know, and that's the worst place to be in as a wrestler. You don't want apathy. You want somebody to either love you or hate you. So I think it's a step in the right direction for Von Wagner. Let's just see if they can execute on it. Bruce, on Wagner and Dijak. I was going to say the other guy.
Kelly wrote that he thought it was Wagner's best match since the brawl with Solo Sikoa. It's Von Wagner on my TV. I'm like Jose Mourinho with the headphones coming off of his head in the booth. Like, oh, I don't want to see this.
Kelly was having a rough night. We'll just leave it at that.
That's true. Yeah. a Von Wagner match usually isn't a good antidote for a rough night, but I'm surprised that you're surprised that he lost here, because Dijak hasn't lost a match yet. And I don't waste that on a Von Wagner match on a Tuesday night go home.
It didn't even cross my mind. So, okay. Yeah, that makes
and
a lot of sense.
And then you have Mr. Stone in the back asking the question that we've been asking all these years, like, who the hell is Von Wagner? He's like, you snarl, you growl, and you yell, but what else do you do? I'm like, exactly, what else do you do? No one knows. I think that the one thing that modern wrestling does really badly is they don't get fully developed, not even fully developed, but even characters that are developed enough to be more than just, I'm someone that can do wrestling stuff, right? Wagner, for a lot of time, couldn't even do the wrestling stuff very well. He's at a passable point now, but he's still not someone where I'm like, hey, a Von Wagner match, I'm definitely tuning into this. So for me, I hope that what they do is they take him off TV. Because Mr. Stone even asked him, like, why do you have me managing? It's been a year and I don't know anything about you. I hope they take him off TV. They show some vignettes where he's been, maybe do the Rocky vignettes where he's training, do a different thing. And then he comes back and it's something more than just, I wear dark tights and I'm a big dude from the South who snarls and yells. Like, we need more than that. Give me something. Stevie Turner is a streamer, right? Tiffany Stratton is a spoiled rich kid. Roxanne Perez is a plucky, uppity baby face. GD Dolan and JC Jane are basically the mean girls. Like, we know who these characters are. We don't know who that is when it comes to Von Wagner. We know who Wesley is. We know who Braun Breaker is. We know who Grayson Waller is. We know Schism. We know who Schism are. We don't know anything about Von Wagner. So they really need to hone in on, not just with Wagner, but when they're bringing people up from the PC or through NIL, like, before you actually give them an angle on or anything on TV, make sure they understand their character. This is one positive I'll say about Hank Walker. They understand his character, and he understands his character. Aside from all the negative stuff I've said about him, like, they got that part down. So they need to do that here with Von Wagner, because him as a big body is always going to have a place in WWE, at worst as a mid-card fall guy. And that's still a good career to have in terms of TV time, pay, etc. So if they really want that from him, then they really need to focus in on creating a character that has defining traits that aren't just, I snarl and I lose my matches.
Indeed. And I do. I hope they work on that. I mean, like you said, that's a great place to be. It's a great place to be. You know, if you can, like, you know, Kelly says it all the time, if you can be the Miz, be the Miz. And, you know, it's a little bit of a different comparison, but, you know, in the way it kind of works here, you know, it's if you can be that, if you can be somebody that they can rely on to get other people over, like, perfect. You're going to get all this exposure. You're going to have a consistent paycheck, like, do it. All right, let's see. What else haven't talked about yet? So there's a whole bunch of vignettes, backstage segments. I have most of them written down because, as I said earlier, I wasn't expecting to host the show tonight. So I'll go through – I'm going to go through real quick. Let's go through about five of them. I'm just going to kind of rapid-fire go through. Feel free to throw in what you want. So we saw the Apollo Crews vignette for his two out of three falls match against Carmelo Hayes at Vengeance Day, where Apollo Crews kind of obviously talking about that, and you know, what those two out of three falls are going to mean, and he was talking a bit about you know, his feud coming up to his feud with Mello coming up to this point. We also saw Tony D'Angelo and Stacked backstage, basically just talking about how they need to take care of a few things, and how Stacks is now the underboss, so he took care of some things. And then they walked off. So I don't know. That was weird. Not really sure what things they took care of, but whatever. We saw a Bron Breakker and Grayson Waller hype segment for their Vengeance Day cage match, which I thought was pretty well produced, actually very well produced. I wouldn't say made me care about the match between them, but it kind of did get me a little bit hyped for the cage match, mostly just to see what Grayson Waller does after, you know, his they even showed it in this vignette, you know, him leaping off the top of War Games. So I'm kind of curious to see if he does anything crazy here. Not looking forward to it the most out of Vengeance Day, but it's not my most anticipated match, but by a long shot. But definitely looking forward to it more so, I think, because of the cage, even though it is gimmicky, but whatever. Let's see. And then the last thing I'll end on here before I get your take on some of the stuff, Isla Dawn and Alba Fire. We saw a vignette where Isla Dawn was at first solo on screen somewhere, presumably like in the woods or something, a fire going, there's a bit of a cauldron. She had some sort of a stone bowl with this powdery substance in it. And kind of cryptically speaking about Alba Fire and her essentially, I forget how she worded it, but I'm just going to say turn into the dark side and joining up with Isla Dawn. They did a little bit of like the ceremony thing where she threw some of the powder in the fire. Thought it was cool looking. A little weird, but whatever. I think that's par for the course with the Isla Dawn character, so I'm completely fine with it. I've been talking about this potentially happening for weeks now, maybe even longer than that. Isla Dawn and Alba Fire tag teaming and becoming a team. Their feud has been going on for so long now. Even like at the beginning of the feud, I'm like, these two characters are so similar. I feel like if they were singles on the roster, they would kind of almost contradict one another. So why not put them together in a tag team? I think that was almost verbatim what I said. This was kind of cool to actually see it happen. You know, often like some of the things we talk about come to fruition, but sometimes it doesn't happen exactly as you talk about. It's just cool when it does happen. But I think this could be a really cool pairing. There's, you know, like I said, a lot of similarities between the characters, very dark, you know, cryptic in a lot of ways. So I think they're going to play off each other very well. And if this vignette is anything to go by, I thought they had some pretty good chemistry there. Granted, it's hard to tell out of a taped vignette. We'll see, you know, more once we see them either in a live segment backstage or in the ring. But so far, I like what they're putting out. On any of those segments, Bruce?
I'll touch on real quick the, I wish I was just talking about that. I just forgot on. Oh, Apollo Crews out there, like he's Phoenix Jones, the vigilante on the streets at nighttime talking about this and that. So what we see with Apollo Crews is he goes from the diner, then he goes to the fishing boat, then he goes to the barber shop. But then his opponents all come to the diner to meet him too. So maybe they'll go to the streets to meet him next week. I don't. Okay. That aside, the other thing I want to talk about real quick was the Kiana James and Fallon Henley backstage segment, because Kiana James told someone, I think it's Zach or something, I don't know, said that she, you know, I love you, and then Henley walked up. And it's another one of those where James is saying, it's not what it sounds like, and Henley is just, you know, not believing her. And so it's kind of similar to the Andre Chase Duke Hudson dynamic here. And, you know, for me, I'm thinking, watch, that's like her dad or her brother or something, right? Or probably not her dad, but like her brother or her cousin or something. And so, when it comes to quality control, like I think there are only one or two matches where there were no shenanigans, clean finish, nothing before or after the match, just straight up, straight down. I think it was Stevie Turner. That match had no shenanigans before, during, or after the match. And actually, that might have been – oh, Indy Hartwell is where we start. Every other match had some issue going on, some angle playing out during the match, after the match, before the match, whatever it might be. Just get some clean finishes. No, nothing has to be run after or before. Just go into it. And I would like that. So, you know, that all aside, they are doing a really good job of, even when people aren't having matches, they do quick vignettes, quick backstage segments that still extend the angles and stories that they've been involved in, which I think at times AEW has struggled with. But in terms of the longer term stories, they've done a lot better than WWE has. So there's a give and take, I think, with each. And sometimes when you get too focused on the week to week, you forget about the macro structure. Sometimes when you're so focused on the macro structure, you forget about the week to week. So I think that right now NXT is doing a good job of balancing the week to week with the longer term stuff. Like we talked about Hank Walker and Drew Gulak and Charlie Dempsey, talking about Roxanne Perez and JC Jane and Gigi Dolan. This Braun Breaker, Grayson Waller thing's been going on for months. So they're doing a good job, whereas, you know, especially during 2.0, it really just felt like a week-to-week thing without any sort of big picture. So they've done a much better job there. And there was one more vignette I wanted to talk about, I think. Where was it? Well, beyond that, I will say that looking ahead to Saturday, they did a really good job with the end of the show hype video, for lack of a better term, for Saturday's show. Even though I think at this point, if you were going to tune in, you're already set to tune in. I don't know if anything tonight changed that. I think what anything tonight did was reinforce the thoughts of those who were already heading into or excited about watching the show on Saturday. So another good video, which is what they always do. And I think, again, as a whole, this go-home show was probably the best go-home show they've had. Ooh. I don't remember the Halloween Havoc go-home show being very good. I don't remember the last one being very good. Probably since summertime or around there. This was a really – they didn't just pack it in. They put a lot of stuff into it. They made sure things had purpose. And the matches, for the most part, were pretty good.
Sorry, I just saw the tweet that you shared of – Edge holding Beth Phoenix's butt, and it threw me. All right. Anyway, so with that, I think that's going to take us to the end of our show tonight. As I said earlier, I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses. I do have one up for PW Torch. I have one up for tonight on PWTorch.com. I will also have one up on Saturday for Vengeance Day. As I said earlier as well, we will be recording a VIP roundtable for VIP subscribers after NXT Vengeance Day goes off the air. You should probably see that drop in the VIP feed the following day. And then also on Sunday, I will be on Wrestling Night in America right here with Greg Parks. And because I forgot to say at the beginning of the show, if you ever do want to be part of this show, you can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com or give us a call 515-605-9345 as Brian and Ryan did tonight. Bruce, who are you?
I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253, and I will have a live report going for Saturday's event. So if you're not able to watch it live, you can at least keep up with the live report, which will be updated after every match goes final.
All right, guys, we'll talk to you next time. Enjoy Vengeance Day, and we'll see you next week.